Okay, so I think that you'll see the background question. That's going to occupy us for the next 2 weeks. Is who really bears the risk? Who bears the loss when there's an agreement? There's some sort of contract, but there's no ability to perform it. So will we assign the liability to, let's say, the balabais and say that even though the poel can't work, the balabais has a duty to compensate him, to pay him for pay out the rest of the contract? Or do we say that it's the poel's loss and the balabais is absolved from having to make any payments since the work can't be performed? And the question that I want us to consider is how would we even go about assigning liability in these kinds of cases, right? How would you decide who bears the risk or who bears the loss in a case where it's impossible to perform under the contract? So, do any of you have, I mean, we'll look at the sugyas in a second. Any of you have thoughts offhand, like how we even might go about doing this theoretically and abstractly?
I think similar to like an economic theory of Nezek that you might want to try to like embrace like a utilitarian model where whoever can front the easiest economic losses, so those parties would be privy to the duty.
Yeah, that's a really nice way of putting it, Noah. I think that's right. And I think this is going to have a lot of evidence in the Sugya on Ayin Vav, I mean, based Ayin Zayin, Amud Aleph, and Vav Metzia, that one way you might want to allocate responsibility is based off who is in the best position to have foreseen and therefore averted the loss, right? Who is in the best position to have known that it might occur and therefore would have had the obligation to make some stipulation about what would happen under such circumstances, right? So you can imagine like one party has better information about a certain event occurring. So you might think that we'd assign liability to the party who has that information and therefore should have made a stipulation in the contract about who would be burdened with the loss in such a case. Does everybody see Noah's suggestion? I think that's a really nice way of phrasing it, and I think we'll see this has support in the Sugya and Bamitzia. Yoni has a hand. Go for it, Yoni.
Yeah, is that the same thing as what Noah said? I thought, I mean, maybe it is. I thought Noah was arguing, I mean, what sounds like what you argued, Mar, that it's more the brunt of responsibility goes on whoever could have preempted best. And it sounds to me like what Noah was saying was that we look at it economically more in terms of whichever party can best, you know, take the brunt of the damage. So the richer party, the party that needs the business less.
Yeah, that's true. So they're slightly different. I think mine is just like a more, a more sophisticated version of what Noah's saying. I mean, they're both economic. You're right that Noah's talking it almost about like, who could absorb the cost the most. And I'm phrasing it more in terms of responsibility, right? So like we're gonna assign the burden to like incentivize the party who could have foreseen it to be preemptive and make stipulations about it ex ante. So yes, I agree.
Those, aren't those though very different? Like one's more of a blame game a little bit, like whichever party can be blamed more or could have prevented it more, while the other one's in purely economic, just in terms of we need to figure out the best societal response, and whoever the best response is, they're gonna have to cover the brunt of the cost.
That's fair. Yeah, so we shouldn't give Noah too much
There are
credit.
both economic and non-economic reasons for what Itamar is saying. Like you might, it could be that the person, it could be that for economic reasons we would, it, you could. You could view what Itamar is saying as economic because it has to do with assigning it has to do with like liability assignments before the damage occurs. So you could imagine a society where, you know, a system where like damage occurs or some loss occurs, and then the courts just do the empirical analysis of and assign the liability after the fact, and the parties don't know anything in advance. What Itamar is saying could be phrased like deontologically, which is the, I think, the natural way to phrase it. But there's an economic justification for it too, which is that these, you know, whichever party is in the best position could be like a proxy, you know, to prevent the loss, could be a proxy for like an economic consideration.
Yeah.
It could be a, you could have like an economic, you know, assignment of liability, but in the clothing of, you know, deontology.
Yeah. I think Cole's largely right about that point. So you could think of it in terms of the reason why liability will be assigned to the party who's in the best position to foresee the catastrophe or the impossibility is just because the party who could foresee it has the moral obligation to...
A rule utilitarian would like what Itamar...
Yeah.
So that would be...
That's right. So we'll see. I want you to keep your eyes open when we get through that Sugya and Ein Vav and based on Ein Zayin and Aleph. And tell me if you think that's what's going on in the discussion and the Rishonim. I think there are definitely formulations that support that reading. Let me just take, we have two hands here. We have Adam and Yair. So let's take Adam and Yair.
I think there's also a bit of a trade-off between freedom and liability. And similar to as you would have in a Shoah. So Kabbalah theoretically might have to bear like the largest brunt of the responsibility for a case of honest. All the Eved will bear, as we'll say, like almost no responsibility, depending on the case.
Yeah. So you're saying, so Adam, just formulate that slightly differently for me, but I see where you're getting at.
I mean, I would formulate it as a trade-off between freedom and responsibility.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's necessarily a din in the freedom itself, or if it's just for the manifestation of the nature of the contract. That those types of responsibilities come out.
Good.
But so, you see it in the Rishonim, but there's sort of a bit of a trade-off.
Yeah, I think, Adam, I think I'm going to put it just in more prosaic terms even, but tell me if this is what you're getting at, that oftentimes it'll depend on this background question that we've discussed about the nature of what a contract is. The more you view a contract as a kind of a sale, that when we enter into an agreement, there's a normative right that has been transferred, which conceptually is the same as transferring a piece of property, right? When I sell my house to you, the asset has changed hands, and the purchaser is going to bear like future liabilities. If a hurricane comes and destroys the house, obviously the purchaser is the one who has to absorb that loss because it's his. And so if you think of a contract as not in the weak sense of it's like contingency, if I perform, I'm entitled to some sort of compensation for my performance. But the contract is the transfer of a normative right that when I agree to paint your house, it's like I've sold you the right to have your house painted by me, which you now own. And so you might think if a hurricane comes and makes it impossible for me to come and paint the house, that's the owner's, the quote unquote owner's loss. And it's going to be his burden to bear. So is that what you're getting at, Adam? Something like along those lines?
Somewhat. I think there's also two different ways to look at it. One is the halacha primarily concerned with the trade-off, meaning this is a primary focus, or is it something that is subordinate? I mean, just because of the nature of the relationship, one is more mechuyav in case of ones than another, versus us from the start of the episode, we want perhaps an eved to be maschayev in case of ones, and we would want a kavan to be.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're saying there's some reason why the halacha specifically doesn't want to assign liability to an eved. Is that it? Like,
yeah, I wonder if there is such a thing. I mean, yeah. It's not clear that there is, but...
It's interesting. I got an interesting email from Jesse Limpel. Anybody know Jesse? It's my chavrus of many years at YU. He he graduated law school, and now he's clerking for, I think, an appeals court judge. I gotta check. So he said he was looking into some things about sick leave, and he stumbled across the Chabura, and he sent me a whole email with comments about sick leave, which is actually the sugya and kedushin that we're going to discuss today. And I think he was suggesting something along those lines. So actually, when we discuss it, I'll ask him if I could circulate his email to you guys, and we could discuss his interpretation. Good. So let's take Yair's comment, and we'll look at the sugyas. Yair?
I guess just to suggest another potential model to think about when thinking about ownership is to sort of, not to assign blame necessarily for the onus, but to identify on whose end the onus came to be. There will be at least some cases where it could be clearly identified as one party or another. So, for example, if the Powell gets sick, it's an onus. Nebuch got sick, but he's still the one who's unable to perform. Whereas if the, you know, the field is flooded, then the Baal Baal is the field not flooded. The Powell came and could do the work. And it's not because the Baal Baal is his fault, but he's still the one who, on whom the onus fell.
Okay, so Yair, that's like... I would say that's an interesting suggestion. So but it sounds almost like you're thinking in terms of like spatial, like geography. It's like, did like the onus hit like person A or did it hit person B? Whereas I would say, well, like if you think like in terms of like normative categories, right? So it's not like physically whose body got struck with the onus, but it's more about whose normative right was destroyed by the onus. And then if a contract is a kind of like a purchase, so then the balabais, it's the balabais's work that was destroyed, right? Even though the onus hit the poel's body. You hear what I'm saying, Yair? So I could agree with you conceptually that it's about who did the onus hit, but deny that like it's spatial geographical categories that are going to define the outcome as opposed to the normative categories that are going to define it. What do you think, Yair?
I think that's a point well taken.
Yeah. So we'll see. The Rishonim use this phrase, and the Gemara uses this phrase, Mazalcha Garem and Nistach Basadeyu, like whose field was flooded and whose like luck caused the loss, right? So I think you're right. So one way of taking it is like in your way, and like I think the other way is going to be to take it in my way. So let's revisit this when we see those formulations. But yeah, really interesting comment. Donnie.
According to our first model, what about a case of onis where we're assuming is that every case of onis, there is a way to foresee it, or not that you could completely overt it, but that someone had the possibility of foreseeing it.
Yeah.
Are there cases of onis where it's just completely out of anyone's control?
Yeah, good. So that's going to be addressed directly by the Rishonim here. What if like they're both in equal position, right? Mm-hmm. Like equally positioned to have foreseen it, or they were equally blinded from having been able to foresee it. And then we'll see, it's interesting which rule they adopt. So we're gonna talk explicitly about that. And that's going to shed a lot of light on the underlying theory of contracts that we're really interested in teasing out over the course of the semester. Yeah, excellent. Okay, so let's start.
One more comment?
Yeah. Go for it.
Maybe just a different formulation on Yair's point, which responds to what you were saying, is it's a question of not whose property is being damaged, but who's unable to uphold their end of the bargain. So if the fall is sick, then even though it was unforeseen and he couldn't possibly have written that into the contract, but he's not able to uphold the terms of the bargain of the contract which he agreed to. Whereas if a field becomes unworkable, then that's the Baal Baal's inability to meet his terms.
Yeah, so it's like you're thinking in terms of when you have a contract, each side is supposed to supply something. And again, we'll just look at it in terms of like almost spatial, like geography, or like in terms of agents, to whom is the impossibility more closely associated. So if it's like a disease that's in like the person of the Poel, then it's like his loss. And if it's like in the field of the Baal Bayis, then it's his loss. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it sort of follows or Moshe Feinstein's formulation from the beginning of the year, where like the Baal Bayis responsibility to provide work to the Poel.
Yeah, so good. That's a nice association, Gabe. I would say that your point presupposes the Moshe Feinstein framework of contracts, which is a very weak framework, right? He was like working off like almost the Yushalmi model of like Ein Konin Zemizeh. Like there is no such thing as a contract. It's really just like an understanding that I'll provide you with work and then you'll work the field, right? And you'll get paid as you go. Because the more you think that the Baal Bayis now owns the work, he owns the Poel's labor in a certain way, then a plague to the Poel's labor power is really a plague to the Baal Bayis's, right, possession, his right. So it's like his field itself that's flooded, right, in the person of the Poel. You see that point, Gabe?
Yeah, and that brings us to Kiddushin. So that would be a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of my response to Yair also, exactly. Okay, good, excellent. So let's take a look now at the sugyas, and let's see how a lot of this plays out. So our sugya in Bava Metzia on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph introduces this question of, you know, kind of force majeure or ones in the context of Rav Shita, that a poel is always able to be chozer with Yado al ha'elyona. You recall that the Gemara said that Rav paskins like Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa said Yad poel al ha'tachtona. That seemed to be in tension with Rav generally holding Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, that there's a zchus to be chozer. And the Gemara then says, the Gemara has a question, well, maybe there's a distinction between a poel and a kablon. The Gemara says that can't be, based off the following. So hasocher es hapoel, so you hire a worker, l'chatzi hayom shama shemes lo meis, o shachizas o chama, right? And so the worker gets sick either before he could perform or halfway through performance. So l'chatzi hayom is a bit of an ambiguous phrase. Does that mean that he worked part of the day already? We'll discuss that later. But the point is that either a relative dies, and so the poel has to leave to bury him or to observe Shiva, oshachuzas ochama, or the poel gets sick. So im sachir hu nosein lo scharo, im kablan hu nosein lo kablanuso. If he's a poel, he gets his schar. If he's a kablan, he gets his kablanus. Now, the way all the Rishonim understand this right now is that the Gemara here doesn't mean that he gets his entire salary, meaning he doesn't get paid for the time that he didn't work. Just the point is that he gets paid for the job that he did, right? So for all the work that he did.
Chazal did not believe in mandatory sick leave.
What's that, Cole?
Chazal did not believe in mandatory sick leave.
Exactly. So from this, Cole, this is exactly what's at issue here. From this Gemara, the Rishonim infer that there's no right to paid sick leave. You get paid for the job that you did until now. You don't get paid for the amount of time that you weren't working. Now, although the language of the Gemara is kind of could go either way, right? You might say nosin lo scharo for the entire day, nosin lo kablanuso for the entire day. Tosos argues that in context, it's got to be that you're only being paid for the part that you did. Because the Gemara says, money ilema rabbanan, if this is the shita of the rabbanan that yad poel al ha'alyona, my irya shama shemes lome so shachazas ochama de anis kilo anis nami ha'am rabbanan yad poel al ha'alyona. The Gemara says this can't be the shita of the rabbanan because the rabbanan would allow for this even in a case of non-ones. Right? The rabbanan always say that a poel gets yado ha'alyona. And so it can't be that the chiddush here is aliba de rabbanan at this stage, right? Now, so Tosos points out that if this brisa meant that you get paid even for the job that you didn't do, then it is consistent with the sheet of the Rabbanan, because there's, if you back out stam without reason, without ones, you get paid for what you did. If you back out in a case of ones, then you get paid for what you didn't do, right? But the fact that the Gemara thinks that this can't be the Rabbanan, because this is identical to the Rabbanan's position of Chazara de Poel in a non-ones case, that shows that they're interpreting the Brisa that the Poel is only entitled to the job that he did and not entitled to be paid for the job that he didn't do. I see Yoni has a hand. Yoni, you have a...
Yeah, I think there is one reading of this Gemara that would be more consistent, but I think it's, I guess, more radical than what Tosa even wants to consider, which is to say that you would get paid the entirety of your sick leave, so to speak. So if you worked only half the day, you'd get paid for working the whole day. And that wouldn't be what Shita Rabbanan is. The Shita Rabbanan is that Yadol Ha'alyona, you get like the greater of the two, whatever the remainder costs are to finish the work. But you could have, you know, supposed there might have been some model where you get everything.
You're saying for the Rabbanan even?
Yeah, and then the Chiddush of the Braita is that if you get sick or some onus happens, then you as a poel are entitled to the entirety of the contract, irrespective of whether you actually finish the work.
Right, but Tosas thinks that can't be the way to interpret this brisa, because the Gemara is assuming that this is identical with the Rabbanan's, right? When the Gemara says, Mani ilim Rabbanan, Ma'ir yashama shemes lo meis shuzo sochama, kilo anis nami am Rabban yad pol al yona.
So this. Well, no, it's not equivalent to Rabbanan. The Rabbanan's shita is that it's equivalent. You get the full thing minus whatever expenditure costs are going to be required to finish the work.
Right.
That's what all the onus means.
Right.
I'm saying that you could have had a more radical view, say that in case of onus, you get everything. There's nothing subtracted. You get the entire price of the contract.
Right. I hear what you're saying, Yoni. I'm just saying that Tosus's raya is from the fact that the Gemara itself assumes that this brisa about onus is identical with the Rabbanan Shita in a non-onus case, right? And because the
Gemara... Well, they suggest it and reject it, so they can't be that possibility. So I'm saying that it could say, you're right, it's not exactly Shita Rabbanan, it's more of a Kiddush than Rabbanan.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so hold off on that reading for now, but right now the assumption, we'll work with Tosus's assumption, that this brisa establishes that you don't get paid for the sick time. It just means that you could recover the amount that you worked without penalty for the cost of completion. Okay? So hold off on that thought about it the other way of reading this brisa for now. But that's how the Rishonim are going to interpret. You can see Rashi clearly interprets it this way. Rashi says, no sein lo scharo, hoil ve'onas hu, because there's force majeure, duress, ein lekonso velasos yad la tachtona, ve'no sein lo chatzi d'mei scharo. Right? If the guy worked for half the day, we're not going to penalize him, you know, for the fact that now it costs you more to finish the job. He could recover chati de mescharo and yado ha'al yona. And you see the Gemara itself says that this applies even in a davar ha'avod. That even though the Rabbanan agree that in a davar ha'avod case, yad pol achozer al tachtona, or he has to pay penalties for the cost of completion, like we've seen, that's not going to apply in a case of onus. In the case of onus, he could recover his costs for the job that he did without any penalty, as Rashi here seems to say. But the Rishonim here seem to say pe'echad, that the poel is not entitled to be paid for the job he didn't do. This is also clear in the Shulchan Aruch. You could see in Shin Lamed Gimel Hey. Shulchan Aruch says, in the Davar HaAvod, a poel is not allowed to be chozer, unless he's nenas, kegon shechala huo ishta ubanav, o sheshama shemeis lameis, o miyu eino tzarech l'shalim lahem kol scharam, rak masha asu v'yadam ha'al yona. So the standard reading of this sugya is that the poel recovers the work that he did. He doesn't get compensated for his sick time. That's the main reading of the sugya in Bav Mitzia. Eitan, you have a question on this?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, just from looking, I think it's really interesting that the case in the Gemara is a case when you're doing half the work. I would, like, just when I was thinking when we started the Chabura today, it's like a case where pre-existing or before even the work has begun, something pops up where there's an inability to actually even initiate or start the process. Once you're in it, I think that's a totally different question that you're dealing with. So I think that's a fascinating thing to
watch. Yes, Eitan, I agree with you 1,000%. So as everybody see, Eitan's aura here is focused on the idea of l'chatzi hayom shama shemeis lameis. And he's saying you might have thought that there's a distinction to be drawn here between a case where there's aschal samalach and a case where there isn't. Is that your point, Eitan?
Yeah.
So I think we'll see. I'm going to make a big deal about this later, based off the comment of the Ravid and the Hasagos to the Rif in Gittin, which we'll talk about on Thursday. That's a really important observation. The straightforward reading of the Gemara implies that the poel is not entitled to be compensated for the sick time, even if there's already a schalas hamalacha, right? Even if there's some sort of performance. I think it's the straightforward reading of the sugya. So that's a really good hara, Eitan. Okay. Now, the Rishonim are troubled by this Gemara because it seems to contradict the Sugya in Kiddushin. So here's the Sugya in Kiddushin on Tes Zayin Amud Beis to Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara contrasts two cases. It says, Minayin leboreach, so the Gemara here is discussing an Eved Ivri. So the Gemara says, Tanya Minayin leboreach shechayiv lahashlim, Talmud lamar sheishanim yavod. If the worker, how do we know that Eved Ivri, right, is supposed to work until the seventh year? That if he runs away, he has to make up the time of his non-working. So if he ran away for 2 years, he's got to make up those 2 years. It says, Shei Shanim Yavod, he's got to work for a complete term of 6 years. The Gemara then says, Yachal Afilu Chala, you might think the same rule applies if the Eved gets sick for some of the term. Talmud Lomar Vashvi Yetze. The Gemara says, no. If he's sick for part of his term, he doesn't have to make up the time, because he goes free automatically on the seventh year, right? Amar Mar, Yachal Afilu Chala, you'd think that a worker who's sick has to make up the time. Tamar Lomar Vashvi Yetze, no, he doesn't have to make up the time at all. The Gemara ends up distinguishing, though, and the Gemara says, it depends for how long he was sick for. Chala Shalosh V'Avad Shalosh, eino chayev lahashlim. If the worker, if the eved was sick for, if he worked for at least half of his term, then he doesn't have to make up any of the time. But chala kol sheish chayev lahashlim. If he was sick for the whole term, then he has to make up the time. The Gemara ends up explaining that it depends, really you have to draw the line at half. If he did work for at least half of his term, he doesn't have to make up. If it's less than half his term, so if he only worked for 2 years but was sick for four, then he would have to make up those 4 years. So that's the Gemara's ultimate conclusion. Now, the Rishonim point out here that there's a contradiction, right? If you read this Gemara in Kedushin on Yud Zayin, it suggests that an Eved does get paid for his sick time so long as the sick time doesn't exceed half of the contract term. But the Gemara in Bav Metzia implied the exact opposite. It implied that a poel only gets paid for the work that he did. He doesn't get paid for his sick time. So how do you make sense of that supposed contradiction? That's the issue that the Rishonim are dealing with here. What do you guys think? Anybody have comments on this before we get into the Rishonim? Okay, so let's take Donnie first.
Why are we assuming that Eved Ivri is the same as Poel?
Yeah, it's a really good point. You'll see Tosus is going to distinguish, but a lot of Rishonim assume that they have the same din. The reasons are for something we discussed like very early in the year, that they're just assuming that a poel itself is a kind of an eved, right? Which is a theme that we've touched on throughout. So they're assuming that there's no real ontological distinction between them. Conceptually speaking, they're very similar.
Could there be a difference though between like Eved Ivri and Eved Kanani? It seems like the Eved that we've been talking about throughout the year seems to be more the Eved Kanani prototype, no?
No, I think even the Eved Ivri, there is some tension about whether Eved Ivri Gufo Kanoi. But, and we'll see, this Gemara here is clearly talking about an Eved Ivri because it's talking about...
Of course, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's why I was a little confused. Like, why for sure it's the same thing as Poel? Like, every time we talk about Eved, I've been thinking about Eved Kanani. Maybe that was a mistake.
Eved Kanani is a perpetual term of service, so it wouldn't make much sense to compare him with a Poel.
Right, but I think, Donnie, you'll see that a lot of Rishonim here are going to suggest that they have this similar status. So, yeah, so okay. Hold off on that thought for a second. But, yeah, it's a good point. On the face of it, that's the natural distinction, right? But what's striking here is a lot of Rishonim don't buy that distinction, and they think there's a real contradiction between these two sigyas. Yeah. Okay, Eitan, you have a hand?
Yeah, I would just say that you can make a distinction. I guess this is similar to what Donnie's saying, but if you're focusing much more on, like, task-oriented jobs, which is like what Bob Mitzia seems to be doing, and like the fulfilling one's contract in terms of like the number of years one has to fulfill in order to receive compensation, then you can make a distinction between the two cases. There's no language in Bob Mitzia that describes how long or what the specific job is or any prior relationship to this specific task. It seems like it's a very sudden or short thing that he has to go home because he got sick or because he has to sit Shiva, whereas the Kedushin case seems like, okay, this is just a long-lasting relationship, and he disappears for a significant amount of time in the middle of this contract, and it's like a year's thing and not necessarily, oh, because he hasn't finished the specific task.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. The one pushback that I would put forward is that the Gemara does, in Bav Metzia, speak about a sachir. And a sachir is a schir yom, right? He's hired for a certain duration of time. So if it was just kablanos, then I think your distinction would be much sharper. The fact that the Gemara speaks explicitly about a poel undermines that distinction somewhat. Yeah, but it's a good ara. Adam.
Yeah, I don't want to run ahead too much, but what I would want to say is very similar to what the Ritva says.
Okay, good. So
I would want to say what the Ritva says.
Yeah, so let's get to the Ritva, and then you could endorse it or...
I think there's sort of tangential. I think there's also an interesting idea of like Lahashlin was like, how is he paying you back? Would repeat the years, and if so, how long do you have? How do we temporally measure that? Especially given the point that even originally the time period is variable.
Yeah.
And what's the markup?
Yeah, good. So let's bring that up when we get to the ritual, which we'll get to in 2 minutes. Yeah. Ben and Yoni, and then we'll look at the resources. Ben?
Yeah. Just when we talk about Scar when it comes to an Evan, what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Scar doesn't Evan get.
Yeah, really good point. So what do you guys think? So I think the standard idea is that an Eved gets prepaid for his services. You'll see the fact that this is kind of raised by the rush here undermines this point somewhat. But I think the standard view is that an Eved is sold up front for the value of his labor for the next 6 years, right? And that's why it's, you know, an Eved is more of like a sale of a person. So Ben, if you're buying my labor, so then we say, look, I'm strapped for cash. How much would you pay for my labor of 6 years? It's kind of like an employment contract, right? And you pay it all in advance. It's not like each day I pay you as you go. And that's why the Gemara is thinking in terms of making back time, right? You bought 6 years of my labor. If I'm sick or I run away, whatever, then the question is, do I have to make up the time? It's not a payment question because the payment has already been made. In the Poel case, you get the sense that a Poel generally gets paid after the fact, right? After he performs the labor, then it's biyomo titan scharo, you got to pay him as he performs. That's the sense you get from the sugyas. Does that answer your question, Ben?
Right. So you're, yeah, but so like if we were making a real comparison between Poel and Eved, would the argument be that you should, like, what does that mean to withhold? What does that mean not to withhold payment to an Eved, especially if it seems to only be up front? Like most of the Eved's payment comes through living conditions. No,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's considered to be part of his payment, or it's just a condition of his service. I think you're seeing that the Gemara is assuming that the Baal HaBayis already bought the labor of the Eved, and now there's just a question of, does he have to make up for lost time? And I think that's going to be important for our interpretation of the Sigya. So let's revisit this.
Is there a tyrant package of the Torah promises to Eved?
Yeah, Hanukkah is a bit of a separate issue, and I actually want to talk about that separately. But I don't think that's related to this question here, Noah, the retirement issue. Zolti, you had a hand? Yoni?
Yeah, I don't think it solves the entire issue, but I think it's worth noting that the Gemara in Mishia limits the application of this onus rule specifically to Davar Avod cases. It's not as clear what happens if it's not Davar Avod.
So I don't.
Presumably, no more standards.
So I don't think that's true. I don't think the Gemara is limiting it to a Davar Avod case. I think the Gemara is saying that at least one important application of it is the Davar Avod case. It's not a limitation. It's meant to be just at least one instance of it. So even
the Gemara seems to say it specifically the case they're talking about is specifically Davar Avod, and that's why
there's no Davar Avod. You can just walk away.
I think the Gemara is saying that even though generally the Rabbanan think in Davar Avod you're bound to continue performance, Ones dissolves that duty. Ones allows you to get off. But it's not the only application. I think we're saying
that. Sure, but it's not clear as much what happens when it's not Davar Avod. I think that there's a little bit more of an ambiguity there.
Yeah. Yeah. So you might say.
On the Poel side, what's even the question? If it's not Davar Avod, he can. L'choladeos, he can just withdraw. I mean, okay, Rav Dusa, maybe not, but.
Right.
Maybe Diablo.
Right. For the Rabbanan.
There's no. It would only come up with Davar Avod because otherwise there's nothing pressuring the Poel to stay in the contract. Avchatzi Ayom, walk away, take whatever you've earned.
I think that's why the Gemara thinks that it's unique. It's the Chiddush is applying this to Davar Avod case. You don't need this at all when it comes to a general case of Chazar without Davar Avod, because of course, Filo B'chati Yom Kibi Chazar, as Cole's saying.
Sure, we can always have the question of the compensation package. Maybe we're more willing to give more to the Poel because he's sick, because he's onus.
I agree. I think what you're saying, Yoni, is that once the Gemara applies that brisa to a Davar HaAved case, it's an open question about whether in a non-Davar HaAved case, maybe the Poel could even get more than, maybe he gets sick leave in a non, maybe he gets paid sick leave in a non-Davar HaAved case. Is that your suggestion, Yoni?
Yeah, more or less. And I think therefore, it's not, I don't think it solves entirely the contradiction between Kiddushin and Bar Mitzvah. I think you still need other stuff, but I think it's a big caveat when comparing the two, that it's not it's not always so obvious. You can just that they're contradictory.
I think you're right, but that you're just denying Tosis's reading of the Gemara. Tosis is emphatic to say that there is a contradiction, right? Because he wants to say that the sick leave rule in Bava Metzia is that you're not paid for sick leave, whereas the rule in Kedushin is that the Aved is paid. So let's take a look at these Makoros here, and then I'll take Adam's comment back with the Ritva. So if you look here at Tosos in Kedushin Yudayin Amid Aleph, Tosos points his finger at Rishonim, who want to make the following inference. Yesh Shehayu Rotzim Lomar. Right, there were some people who wanted to derive the following conclusion from the sugya about paid sick leave in Kedushin. She'osam schirim melamde tinokos, so those tutors and teachers, imchalu chatzi azman, kimo kein lo yu mashlimin es zmanon, kimo eved ivri. Dehacha, ve'yitlu kol haschiros, kivan shehayu anusim. So a lot of people want to argue on the basis of this Gemara that if you're a teacher and the... there's some ones that occurs, right? Sounds here like even the Malamed gets sick, right? For half the term of the contract. So you're hired for 6 years and then you're out for, let's say, 3 years because of some sickness. You don't have to make up the time, right? Kimokein lo yu mashlimen azman kimovid every dacha. V'yitlu kol haschiros kivan shayu anusin. They should be paid for the full 6 years of their contract based off this Gemara in Kedushin. So notice, Donnie, that these Rishonim are perfectly happy to bulldoze through the barrier between Eved and Poel, right? They're drawing the conclusion from a sugya of Eved to an application of a Poel who gets sick, a Malamed. Now, Tosos doesn't like that. Tosos says, V'kasha duperka socher so'umnim, blah, 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 our Brisa implies that you don't get paid for the sick leave, right? And this is where he brings his proof that I mentioned earlier that the right way to read the Brisa is that you're not being paid. So against Yoni's reading, he says, El al karchach, based off that reading, af kinami hava anus eno notel elama sheherviach. Right? Even though you're anus and getting sick, all you get is the work that you did. You don't get paid for the non-work time. Okay? And therefore, he says, V.M. Cain, Milam de tinokos nami imchalu lo yichu elamasha herbichu. We should apply the rule of the sugyan bav mitzia to the teacher and the tutor who gets sick, not the rule of the sugyan kedushin. And why should that be? Why should the milamdim get the bav mitzia rule and not the kedushin rule? The ein ledamosam klal le'eved ivri. You can't compare the teacher to an eved ivri. The eved ivri gufo kanoi la'adono. Eved Ivri is acquired by his master. Hilka chala shalosh eno chayv lahashlim. Okay? He doesn't have a duty to finish, to make up the years. De'ein yocho lasos melocha yoser miyicholto. All he has to do is do as much labor as he can do, right? Whatever ability he has to do labor, that's what he has to do. Aval melamed ein gufo kanoi. Ela sochar atzmo lilmod ad hazman, uchsheeno yachol lahashlim lo yitol elamashe herviach. So he thinks there's this important distinction on the basis of Eved Ivri Gufo Kanoi that explains the fact of Eved Gufo Kanoi explains why an Eved doesn't bear the loss of Ones, the Balabayas does, whereas a Poel, whose Guf is not Kanoi, it's the Poel who bears the loss of Ones, because he can't perform. So how do you make sense of Tosis's distinction? Why does the fact of Gufo Kanoi explain why a Balabaya should bear the loss? And why does the fact of Poel Lav Gufo Kanoi explain the fact of the Poel bearing the loss? And why does Tosis's distinction matter? Eitan?
Yeah, I would just say that the Eved is giving up his rights entirely as a second party in this relationship. It's very much, he's now under the supervision and watch of this, of his owner. And so therefore, he is not going to get punished when there's no additional gains he could possibly get. He is the only one who could gain or lose is just the owner himself and not the other party, because he is now under, the supervision or watch of the, owner. Whereas in the case of a POA, there are still two distinct parties. And when someone, I think we mentioned it before, when someone cannot fulfill that duty, whatever it is, sick or has to do shiva call, whatever it might be, then he has to bear the brunt of that loss in that case.
So I take it that what you're saying is, and I think this is right, tell me if this is what you're getting at, is that if it's gufo kanoi, then it's like there's a full transfer of a property right. Right, it's like the Eved is now the possession of the Rav, the Baal HaBayis owns him, and you know, in the same way that if I buy a house and the house gets destroyed by a hurricane, I bear the loss, not the seller, right? Because the seller is no longer the owner, he's not the relevant agent. So too, when I purchase your labor, when I purchase your person as an Eved, as Gufo Kanoi, it's my property right that was harmed, and therefore I bear the loss of everything. Is that right, Eitan? Yeah. So I think that's a nice way of putting it. And I think that really speaks to the, you know, this, what's the fundamental nature of the contract. And Tosis is distinguishing between the contractual nature of an Eved Ivri relationship, where it's like acquiring a property right, which is the Baal HaBayis is lost to bear, and a regular Poel relationship where he's thinking it's not that way. And therefore the Poel's entitlement is only to be paid as he provides the work for the Baal HaBayis. As Eitan put it, it's like a two-party relationship and you get paid as you perform. I think what you can say is that the Shitos that disagree with Tosfos, right, the Yesha HaYerutzim Lomar, are denying that distinction. You know, they're thinking, you know, we'll see a few possibilities, that a Poel is like an Eved, whether it's in the strong sense that you acquire his person, or whether it's in a weaker sense that even when you don't acquire his person, you still acquire the normative right to the labor, and owning the right to have the house painted is itself like a kind of a property right. And when there's onus that it can't be performed, it's the owner's loss to bear, right? Meaning the Baal HaBayis, the one who purchased or holds the property right, the normative right to have the thing completed. And so, yeah, and so that's kind of what's underlying this discussion here. This debate is about the nature of how to interpret the contract. Let me just take Yair's point. We have Yair and Dani, and then Cole will take your hand. Go over it, Yair.
Yeah. Okay, two quick observations. Observation number one is that Tosfot, I think, within this theory, would have a harder time explaining why if he's sick for 4 years, then he has to make up the entire thing, but if it's for three.
Excellent.
It just becomes a little trickier. It's not our sick yet, so just worth
not. Nah. Okay, so let me just address that before you get to your second point. Yair is making the excellent point here that, well, if this interpretation of Tosis is correct about Gufo Kanoi, then how do you make sense of the, you know, the amount of the Gemara's distinction about how long the Eved was sick for, right? If the Eved was sick for, let's say, 5 years, the Gemara says that he has to make up the time, right? So how do you make sense of that on my theory? Is that right, Yair? That's the question?
Yeah.
So what I would push back here, I would say if there's a separate principle that explains that case, and that is that there, it's just such, and we'll see the Ritva gestures at this idea, that there it's a separate principle at work, and it's almost like a Mekach Taos idea, that had I known that I was buying merchandise that was so defective that it wouldn't be able to work at all, then I wouldn't have bought it at all. So it's like there it's like a different idea of Mekach Taos, that there's an implied condition in the sale that if you're not fit for work at all, then I'm not bound by the sales terms. Does that make sense to you, Yair?
It does, and then you have to make certain kimtus in the sugya that it's like a kind of, you know, pre-existing condition or pre-existing vulnerability to being incapacitated.
Yeah.
If he gets hit by a truck 2 days after you buy him, then
right.
It would be hard to argue this Mekach Taos.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let me move away from the Mekach Taos idea and move more into like an implied condition. It's just such an umdina de muchach that when I buy you, if you're not going to be able to work, look, we can always contract that in as an explicit condition. And here it's just understood based off like certain social facts and norms that that's like an implied condition. The Ritva is going to make that case, But you're right. It's a little bit, it's a different principle, and we're kind of just putting it in here. But I think that's the best way to make sense of it.
It isn't too far afield of the Kinyanim, so I don't want
to... Yeah, but it's a good point. You'll see the Ritz was going to make that kind of argument. But yeah, so we'll get to that. But good point.
My second Aruch, just looking at... I noticed that there are times when you will, you know, print the Shulchan Aruch and not differentiate between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which is fair because it's a tedious process. But the Shulchan Aruch's own formulation, and based on the language of the Rambam, doesn't say that a poet is only paid for the work that he does. So I don't know, you know, when we want to start talking about Yoni's reading, but I don't think it's impossible that the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch might have some other reading of the Gemara. I haven't found Tosfos' idea very compelling as a textual interpretation issue, but basically it's hard to ignore the language of the Rambam.
It's a good point. So hold off on that, because we're going to discuss on Thursday, we're going to spend some time with that alternative reading of the Gemara that we could push, Yoni's reading, and I think I'm sympathetic to it. But it's against the kind of the whole setup of today that there's a stira between the two sigyas.
Yeah.
So we'll let's discuss that on Thursday more. But it's a good point. I think the Mordechai might have that alternative reading. It's on the source sheet later, so we'll take that up. But yeah, excellent Aras. Donnie and then Cole. Donnie?
Sorry, mine was the same thing as Yair's first point. I had that question.
Good question. Meaning about the how do you reconcile that with the 4-year?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, so you'll see the ritual also has that idea. So, good. Cole?
I think that the just want to say I think the there's a big theoretical benefit to the Bali Tosfos over the Gufo. Conway view of a poel. If you're the Bali Tosfos, so what this is, like this anus thing is really a tour for Tashlumin in the case of Davar Avod, which I think makes an enormous amount of sense. Like in general, workers are allowed to withdraw whenever they want. They have that privilege. Sometimes they have to pay damages if there's a Davar Avod. In the case of anus, so we exempt them from liability. There's a gufo kanoi view of a poel, which is that if there are losses, you're literally disabled from withdrawing. And that language, you know, comes up in the Rishonin. It's difficult to say, given that everybody thinks that a case of anus, the poel is allowed to withdraw. What you'd have to say for that view is that anus like breaks the kinyan. That's conceptually awkward, I think. It makes much more sense to say that anus is a ptur from tashlumin than it does to say that basically it's a, you know, it's an unbreakable kinyan in the case of loss. Anus is an exception. So I think the Bali Tosfos are much cleaner in this respect.
You're saying they're cleaner in distinguishing between a case of gufo kanoi and lav gufo kanoi.
I think they're cleaner go ahead.
Yeah, but we'll see. We have to see how the other Rishonim interpret how they reconcile this distinction, right? We don't know what their view is yet. Right? We don't know how the other Rishonim navigate the supposed contradiction between Kiddushin and Bav Metzia.
I just mean in a... internal to Poel considerations. I mean, these Gemara, like, there's a contradiction between these Gemaras. That's fine. My point is local to the. There's a group of Rishonim that think that for a Poel Gufo Kanoi, and there's a group of Rishonim thinks that like the Ritva, the Rivet, and so forth thinks that like in general for that the withdrawal privilege is really, really narrow, and that loss to the balabais is one of the things that disables the privilege from operating. What you'd have to say for those people is that anus like kicks the privilege back up. It's unclear why that would be.
Right.
You could say it brute. It makes much more sense to say what the Bali Tosfos say, which is that the privilege is there always for everything, and that this is just a Tashlumin. It's not a Hofeldian power. It's a second order question about remedy.
Yeah. I think you're right here, Cole. We're going to discuss this a little more on Thursday. How to fit this kind of trias amesim of the zchus poel lachzor into the framework of gufo kanoi, right? you're saying, is it that it's Kanoi, but that's overridden by Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim, that's overridden by Davar HaAvod, and then that's overridden by Ones, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of the clumsier.
A lot of overriding.
Yes. That's like, it's like a clumsier structure.
Cluttering up my desert landscape.
Correct. Yeah, it's a good point. And we'll take up this more. That's more of like the meta question in the background. Right now, I want to focus more on this narrower question of like just how to understand this contradiction between the two sigils. But yeah, it's a good aura. This is Tosus's distinction. Let me point you to the Ritva, who seems to have a variation on Tosus's idea. I think it's a bit of an open question whether the Ritva is saying the same thing as Tosus, or whether he's getting at a different point. Remember, Tosus's distinction is between the case of an Eved who's Gufo Kanoi and the case of a Poel who's Lav Gufo Kanoi. Here's how the Ritva puts it. Right, he bears the loss of his own sickness. Lo dami poel eved ivri. So you can compare the poel to an eved ivri. Notice he doesn't say, as Toso said, because one is gufo kanoi and the other isn't. He says something else. He says the ilu poel o kablon hiskiru balabayis lemelacha zu v'al davar yadua no tel scharo. He's hired for like a specific task. You know, this is almost like along the lines that Eitan was suggesting earlier. V'kivan shelo asa'o afal pisha chala onenas ein lo el schar masha asa lefi cheshbon. The understanding about when you hire a poel, you know, is that he's hired for like a limited purpose. Even if he's paid per time, right? So it's not as enduring and it's not as all-encompassing of a relationship, I think, to use Eitan's like earlier phrase. Aval eved ivri lo nishtabed lo lasos davar yadua, ela nishtabed lo sheyechofehu limelachto, lomar shekol melachto tehe l'rabo. V'lefikach imchala v'lo asa klum nistach basadeyu shel adam. Right? An eved is bought as like an all-purpose labor purchase, right? So that the balabayas could compel him to do whatever work he needs, right? Shekol melachto tehe l'rabo. And therefore, if he gets sick, it's like the balabayas, his asset, has been destroyed. So the question is, do you think that the Ritva here is just getting at the gufo kanoi, lav gufo kanoi distinction through like other words? So like he's really saying the same thing as Tosos, as like maybe you could point to the four phrase of nistach basadehu shel adon. Or maybe the Ritva is saying something like along different conceptual lines, that really it's just the fact of how much of his labor, how wide the contract is intended to be, that's going to determine who bears the loss. So the broader and more comprehensive the contract, the more we view the ones as having fallen in the Baal HaBayis' rishos, right? So like to take Gabe and Yair's earlier idea, you know, does the onus in here prevent the poel from working, or does it prevent the Baal HaBayis with supplying the work? And then you'll say, well, it depends. If the contract was very limited and the poel gets sick, then we view the onus as inhering in the poel, right? Because he was supposed to do a very minor task for the Baal HaBayis, and now here he got sick, right? So that's preventing him from doing the job that he's supposed to do that he owes the Baal HaBayis. If the contract, however, as in the standard Eved Ivri case, is very broad, right? He's supposed to be an all-purpose laborer for me, and he's going to do whatever I need him to do. Then if the poel gets sick, we view the loss as inhering in the Baal HaBayis' asset, right? Because the poel is like in his person is so designated for the Baal HaBayis' purpose that a loss to the poel is considered to be a loss to the Baal HaBayis. So I think there's a way of phrasing that conceptually without reducing it to gufo kanoi. It's not about the I see Donnie doesn't like that. He thinks that's like conceptually splitting hairs.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, right. That's my question. My question is the Ritva's distinction just a, you know, a proxy for saying Gufo Kanoi, Lav Gufo Kanoi? Or is there a different idea maybe along Gabe and Yair's formulation about, well, if he's like an all-purpose worker, then a loss to the worker is viewed as a loss, a hit to the Bala bias, without reducing it to Gufo Kanoi. So what do you guys think of that? Adam?
Yeah, I would be happy to make a jack of all trades is the master of none type argument. That you have him as an all-purpose worker, but doesn't mean he's meant to do any work. I mean, if you have that work for him, then fine, then he does the work. But there's no guarantee at any time that he will have work.
Ah, that's interesting.
You could have him for 6 years, he could do nothing, and he'll still fulfill his hochiv.
You're saying, you're saying that that's why it's the Baal Habayis' burden to bear, just because it's almost like there's no... Let me put it a little differently. I think this is like a nice way of putting it. Is there an... Let's think just like in terms of implied conditions. Is there an implied condition that if he can't work, then he's still entitled to be paid? And you want to say, well, maybe if like his contract is not really contingent on this work or that work or some other work, then there's no reason to think that if he can't do certain work, that he shouldn't be paid. Whereas in the kind of standard Poel case where you're hired for a limited task, where it's so clear that I'm hiring you to do this or that, an inability to do this or that, you know, kind of undermines the whole basis of the contract in the first place. Is that the idea you're getting at, Adam?
Partially. I think this also comes down to what does it mean, Gufo Kanoi, in terms of how do you own the person's time?
Yeah.
In the case of a pull, you own the person's time. Is that if he's just not working for an hour during the day, well, you're paying for that hour. Implicitly, he's supposed to be working every single hour.
Yeah.
He's being paid for. Versus the case of an Evan, it's he's supposed to be working every single hour. He could be doing whatever he wants any hour. The idea is that you could always take him away from his break and make him work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting point.
Probably just going to be an expression. I think the Ritva is getting at they're climbing the same mountain from different sides.
Yeah. Okay. So you think he's in Tosis's camp?
I like the way I said it better.
Okay, a non-committal way of putting it. I think what Jesse was getting at in his email, and again, I'll ask him if I could circulate it. I think what he was trying to say, maybe it's too much, this is too laden with my interpretation of it, is that like it's almost like it depends on how like vulnerable the worker is. And so like the Eved who's more vulnerable, and maybe Adam, this is your earlier formulation, the Eved who's more vulnerable as a worker because he's subject to the full powers of the Bala Bias' command, right? He could be pushed anywhere. So he gets this protection of sick leave, whereas like the Poel, who I guess is less vulnerable as evidenced by him having a narrower obligation. But I don't know. Why can't you have one job that's all consuming, right? It's like your job is to mow the lawn or, you know, from morning until night, or you put the bricks in from morning until night. So I'm not sure about that. I need to think more about it. Yoni, you have a hand?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, I guess it's already earlier, but your distinction between whether you think that Ritva is Gufo Kanoi or not versus whether or not it's like the more types of work or like general responsibilities you have, the more it's just like Nistampa Sadeo. I'm kind of with Donnie that I don't see a substantive difference.
Okay.
That, like, throughout the whole year, we spent a long time talking about how amorphous Gufo Kanoi is with regard to a Poel in general. There was, like, all these different forms of talking about Gufo Kanoi, all these different types. And I think at some point, you're just going to get back to the exact same, like, derivatives, like, distinctions. And I think that further if it is not, whether it means exactly the same type of definition Gufo Kanoi or Tosu does, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
Right.
But I don't think there's, like, a substantive difference.
Right. I think one thing that helps that formulation is like the your way nistachba sedeyu shaladon sounds like Ufo Kanui language, right? It's the Bala Bias's asset that was flooded. So that helps. Did Noah, did you have a hand?
Yeah, I didn't really have anything to add. I was just going to say that I am also, I don't think that this is the same distinction of the but I don't know how, I'm still trying to like process and figure out how the RIFA is
different.
How the RIFA is different.
You could go for Cole's non-committal formulation that they're just climbing the same mountain from different sides, right?
I don't see that.
Right. Let me point out here.
You're not on the mountain, Marlo.
Right. Let me point out here that the Ritva, explicitly addresses the earlier Yair question about, if it's a Gufo Kanoi idea, so then why in the world should the Poel ever have to make up lost time, right? I think Mar said if he's sick for more than 4 years, or in some readings more than 3 years, he has to make up his lost time. So the Ritva says, Ela dechichala yos.
Yeah, not the Poel, it's Mar.
Sorry, the Eved, correct. Or at least the person who's...
Also, your mic is like, your volume isn't so good.
Oh, does everybody else have that problem, or is it just Cole?
I also have that problem.
You're
like fading in and out. I don't know if you're covering your speaker or something with your hands or anything like
no.
that.
No.
This makes it seem like the, what's it called, our usual problem is because of the computer then.
Wait, so now could you hear me clearly or no?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, sorry. Now it's fine.
Okay, I'm sorry. So the Ritva offers the following distinction. He says, "Ela dechichala yoser mishalosh, have umden daita demuchach, de lav lahachi nachas lemizban." Right, when the poel gets sick, when the eved gets sick for more than 3 years, it's just an umden adas, right? Demuchach. It's a, it's just like a known background assumption or implied condition. It's an umdena de lav lahachi nachas lemizban that he wouldn't have bought the eved under such terms. And so as to protect the employer so that he doesn't entirely lose his investment, the Eved has to make up the lost time. So you see, I think the way the Ritva is explaining it here is that A, it's an implied condition. We're just assuming that the Bala Bias would not wanted to have bought the Eved if he knew that he couldn't work for majority of the time. And then he kind of adds in, I think, a separate consideration, like, and I think this is just like almost like just like a straightforward, like an economic consideration. Like the Torah, it's kind of like has a built-in insurance policy just to protect him that he shouldn't lose his investment, so casually. And so the halacha protects him. So I'm a little my issue here is that the Ritva seems to be mixing two separate principles. One is like an implied condition. When I bought the Eved, when I buy a car, is there an implied warranty that if it doesn't work within the first year, it breaks in that the company is going to provide me with a new one, right? That's the first idea. And the second idea sounds almost like the halacha stepping in artificially to protect the employer here, kadesha lo yafsid halal gam yomono chayv zel hashlem, which I think is slightly at odds with the idea that, oh, there's just an assumed social condition, an implied term that, you know, he's got to at least work for a certain amount of time. So what do you guys think about the two points made by the Ritva? Let's take Yair. Yair, I know you had your hand up before. Do you want to weigh in on this, or you have a separate point?
I did not want to weigh in on this.
Okay, so
I wanted to just ask a question. I know we saw this was already Mizman about the Gemara of Yud and Bov Mitzia, the sort of difference between like a Stam Poel and a Poel for Malachazo.
Yeah.
And the Ritva, I think, definitely is referring to the latter, and based on his formulation, to the exclusion of the former.
Right.
If that's the case, then I think it would become much more difficult to suggest that
this is Tosafot's reading, and you'd have to appeal to something like what Adam was saying or something else.
Nice. Okay, so you're saying that's like good reason to distinguish. It's not just the Gufo Kanoe idea. Yair, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, good, good. Adam, you wanted to weigh in on the Ritva here?
And yeah, I'm not sure if I could do this like wordless so neatly, but I think the Ritva is interesting in terms of like the distinction I was talking about before, whether the halacha itself has a concern about the Ebed's liability in terms of the Ones. Here, especially with the clause of this whole thing about 3 years, is obviously the Baal Bais wouldn't have wanted that to have happened. It's saying that the normative halacha from the contract itself would have implied that for 5 years, still the Ebed would not be chayv in terms of the Ones. He would now have to be give back those years. So the halacha is now stepping in to actually protect the Baal Bais.
Yeah.
Because in the rush, you see, which I guess looking forward to the rush, but like the rush, you see the opposite distinction. It seems that the super of the halacha is stepping in favor of the Eved.
Yeah.
You force the Baal Bais to be mochel the Eved up until a certain point.
Right. And here, at least in this case, that's it's like a. So you agree with me that the second clause here is in tension with the first clause, right? The idea that the halacha is stepping in is slightly in tension with it.
I wonder if this also has to do, I guess, if Papalus has to do with Cole's point, is whether or not Tosos, Ritva and Tosos are coming up the same amount and from opposite sides. It could be, I know this is part of that distinction, is whether or not you make that distinction between these two forms of Gufo Kanoi is going to affect whether or not you understand how the rebuttal have to come in and sort of change the nature, or whether they need to change the nature of the actual contract.
It's interesting. I would have thought that either would have been sufficient. Either would have been sufficient as a workaround. Even if it's Gufo Kanoi, you could still explain why the Poel bears some of the loss, either because of an implied term or because the halakha is artificially stepping in. So I wouldn't think that you would need both of those to produce the result. Let me just...
You need both of what?
Both the idea of Umdin Das and the idea of the halakha stepping in. I would think that either could be sufficient to overcome that general presumption that if it's the Baal Bais' property, it's the Baal Bais' loss, right? You could have an implied warranty just because that's an implied term between the parties. Or you could say the halacha is just establishing like a, almost like an automatic insurance policy to help out employers, right?
Well, I think depending on how you understand Gufo Kanoi, right? If you understand like Ritva saying Gufo Kanoi in terms of a poll means you have him set aside for a specific job, then yes, we are concerned about the idea of the Baal Bais losing out. But if that's not the case, you just have him there in case you need him for work, then what are we concerned? You don't necessarily have him for work anyway, so have him in case we have work.
Yeah, that's kind of like the earlier formulation you had, right?
Yeah.
Right, but I wonder if that's true, that it's in case we have work, as opposed to like, it's for all the work that I have, right? Kind of like it's not conditioned on there being work. It's like, there's always work to be done, and so I always have a right to push him around. But I have to think more about your idea about this, if there's work. Idea. It's an interesting idea. I'm not sure if it's true. So I'm going to sit on it for a day. Let me also point out here that even though the Ritva's formulation is Kadesh Shelo Yafsid Halal Lagamri Omono, you don't have to look at that exclusively as protecting the Baal Bais. So you might think that there could be a chilling effect, right? If there's a risk that when you buy an Eved that you'll lose your whole investment if he gets sick the next day, then people are going to stop buying avadim, right? Because it's too great of a risk, right? No one's going to purchase avadim if they could always claim that they're sick and get off from most of the labor. So you might say, oh, it's to protect the institution of avadim, which oftentimes is there to protect avadim so that they could have employment opportunities. It's like a minimum wage question, right? So you might say that Kadesh Lo Yafsid Halal Lagamri is not just for the Baal Bais' interests per se, but it's just kind of just for the interest of the institution. Notice here in the last line, the Ritva says the following. He says, "Ulefichach," because it's really just here to protect the Baal Bais, to make sure that the Baal Bais doesn't lose entirely. Patruhu legamri afilu chala kol sheish, kishelo nizbata legamri v'haya osa lo maisa mechet. Even if the worker got sick for all 6 years, and he wasn't able to do, I guess, like the main jobs, like the laborious work, if he's able to do a ma'aseh mechid, he's able to do some like small minor stitching and small menial work, that's sufficient for him to discharge his obligation, since his obligation, it's just a gzeira so that the Baal HaBayis won't lose his entire investment. If he could recoup some of it, right, as evidenced by the poel being, the eved being able to do some minor labor, then the halacha is not going to step in to protect him here, which is an interesting qualification. Okay, Ben, we're going to give you the last word before we adjourn for the day.
Does the Rigva imply a little bit though that three is somewhat arbitrary? Because if like why do we step in specifically at three to say, you know, the Yom Dinah is that he only would have bought it if it was 3 years?
Yeah, it's a really good point. Meaning if it's like, you know, maybe if the Yom Dinah is like socially contingent, maybe it'll really change. Like what's the rational, you know, at what point is it rational for the Baal HaBayis to say, I never would have entered into this agreement had this thing occurred, right? And so it shouldn't necessarily be a 3-year divide. It might depend on like other conditions. Is that your point, Ben?
Right. Yeah, and I think that would perhaps, in my mind, would be more of a support for Tosfo, and perhaps to argue that they actually are more different than some would suggest, because at least three is based on the fact that we know more than 3 years is evidence that you're gufo kanoi. So there actually is something substantive to the 3 years.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. That's kind of what this idea Tosfo is getting at in the last line here, which I didn't read. That there's something just intrinsically significant about 3 years for the Shem Eved. We'll take a look at that formulation. Let's try to address it on Thursday somewhat. So it's a good Ha'ara, Ben. So I have to go back to this formulation in Tosos. So we'll pick up with on Thursday is this, we'll see the Rush's, the Rush quotes two Shitas that are against Tosos and trying to reconcile the two Sugyas. And then we'll move into the discussion of the Sugya. See what I have here on, yeah, I guess we'll start, look at the Rishonim in the next few pages that discuss this sugya still and the distinctions between Kedushin and Bar Mitzvah. And then we'll get into the sugyas on Ayin Vav and Beis Nayin Zion, like you hire workers and then it rains, so their work is irrelevant. Who bears the loss in that case? All right, so if you get a chance, read the chapter on contracts that I'll resend out today. And then we'll pick up with.
Yeah, get the email.
Okay, I'll email it out. I think I WhatsApped it a while ago, but I'll send it out today to everybody. All right, yeshar koach, everybody.
Can you actually put these, Tamar, can you put these on the Google Doc?
Oh, just upload them to the folder?
Yeah, I think that's better. That way in the future we can consult.
100%. Let me do that. I'll do that today.
Make a separate folder for it, because otherwise the folder just gets too big.
Yeah, I'll put like readings.
Make a smaller folder.
Yeah, I'll make a separate folder of readings under the broader folder for everyone. All right, excellent. Yashar, so we'll pick up on Thursday. All right.
Rebbe, if we see any dolphins today, I'll send more pictures.
Yeah, I'll drive down if the beaches are open.
It's closer from Philly. It's like only 11 hours or so, no? 10 and a half?
Last time we did it on Thanksgiving weekend, it took us 12 hours. To do it, but that's because it was crazy traffic.
You guys probably took breaks, right?
We took one break in Virginia.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's like 11. It's like 10 hours as the crow flies, but you know, get stuck in traffic and things like that. But Ben, yeah, keep us
these days.
Not these days, I know. So Ben, keep us updated on the conditions, and maybe we'll.
Gas is like 99 cents a gallon, so.
Right. And also my car has just been sitting outside doing nothing. So I have like tons of miles I could put on it now. So it's a good time to travel. All right, let me know. Keep me updated about the weather conditions down there, and then maybe I'll drop you a visit.
Okay, great. You have to ask Dr. Hain first before you leave. But,
that's all.
True.
I'll get medical clearance from Dr. Hain, and he'll let me know about like whether the weather there is killing the virus and what the vaccine stage of development is at. All right, shukrof, everyone.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.